Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
But just make sure you can maybe get out of that, you know, 10 days without incurring a massive penalty, just in case he's not better than LeBron. All right, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Hour number two, as we come to you live from our Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience here. All right, we're down to 16 teams, and we're going to go a little deep, dive into the deep end of the pool with the NCAA stuff. Our guy John Rothstein is back, and doesn't get a lot of sleep these days. I know sleep, sleep in June?
We sleep in May.
Sleep in May. That is John, CBS Sports College Hoops Insider, SI as well, College Hoops Podcast. He's got that. Leonard Hamilton this week, right?
You got it. BT's all over it.
Hey, listen, you gotta do your homework on this thing. All right, couple of things. We don't need to belabor this, although we could. The foul or the non-call on Barrett, would you have called that a foul? Obviously, you know which play I'm talking about. The offensive rebound. Is that a foul?
I think it's a foul. I don't think it gets called in that spot.
Well, it obviously didn't get called. But do you think it should get called?
Do I think it should get called?
If it's a foul.
I think there's a lot of calls over the weekend that were poor calls, most notably the call in the Tennessee-Iowa game when there was a foul on Lamonte Turner. Obviously, you know, fouling an Iowa player in a three-point game late in the game. Now, Turner came down and buried a three from the left wing, and people forgot about that. But there's a number of calls when you watch all these games that you could say are tough calls.
It's funny because in the NCAA tournament, I don't
think they're tough, though. I think foul's a foul. What's so tough about that?
They don't become talking points. They rarely become talking points. This is the one example, maybe because BT.
And Ben Zion had a charge, too, before the N1.
But I thought UCF lost the game, though, when they tried to throw an alley-oop up four with, you know, a minute 40 left. That's where they lost the game. They didn't lose the game because they gave up an offensive rebound. They had a chance to go up maybe plus six and work another 20 seconds off the clock.
Yeah, but hold on. You say that with such certainty, and I'm mostly with you. But that doesn't take the refs off the hook for not making the right call that would have still enabled UCF to win the game.
Well, I don't think they made the right call as well on the other end when they ruled the Taco Fall shot a dunk. That's another thing.
Talk about the violation, non-violation.
Right. Yeah. But you play the game based on the calls that are made on the floor. And, you know, they had possession up four with about 90 seconds or 100 seconds left. And they chose to throw an alley-oop rather than be in a scenario where they could have obviously brought the ball back out.
What does this inform us about Duke? I mean, because, look, you and UCF, maybe a lot of people don't know much about them. They have a huge big man. So, what do you have, three blocks on Zion, which is rare. Three dunks, which is also rare on Zion. What does this inform us about Duke, if anything at all?
That they're capable of winning a game like this, a white knuckler in a big spot. And as we've talked about, you know, time and time again the last couple of weeks, this team does not have a veteran presence with NCAA tournament experience that's playing a major role. In 2015, you had Quinn Cook, Emile Jefferson, and Matt Jones. Last year, you had Grayson Allen. This year, it is all on the kids. And, you know, I said when the tournament came out that the UCF matchup was going to be a difficult matchup because, obviously, UCF forces you to go over the top of the defense. And you saw Trey Jones and Goldwire pretty much be left alone on an island there.
Yep.
To see if they could make three, so that's exactly what happened.
We're talking to John Rothstein, Johnson Studio, this segment, next segment as well. If you want to get some tweets and questions, hit us up on Twitter, Tiki and Tierney. John, of course, CBS Sports College Basketball Insider, SI, recently added that to the portfolio. John continues to grow. College Hoops Podcast, Leonard Hamilton, he's with us in studio.
Oh, you have Leonard Hamilton on the podcast?
Go ahead, say it.
Now we love
say
that,
it.
Dude. Black don't crack.
Say
man.
It.
And I just read a story about he's making a ton of money from the success that he's getting.
He's like getting nice bonuses.
The incentives for how far that they're going.
I didn't see what kind of triggers
I think it's like 600 grand he's making.
For each round?
If he goes gets to the Final Four, I believe it is, he's going to make $600,000
in bonuses. If you get to the Final Four of Florida State.
That's more than I mean,
back-to-back also, Sweet 16s.
I know.
He deserves it, and he likes it. But Virginia Tech, going back to Duke, Duke is taking on a fellow ACC squad, Virginia Tech. Blackshear is playing, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have a chance?
They definitely have a chance, Deke. You know, the interesting thing about the matchup between Duke and Virginia Tech, they played a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Virginia Tech didn't have Justin Robinson. Duke didn't have Zion Williamson. But this game, proximity-wise, isn't that far from Blacksburg, and it also isn't that far from Durham. So those two programs should be very well represented in Washington, D.C., and Buzz Williams has experience coaching.
Palpable Buzz Williams.
See, it spreads. He has experience coaching in the Sweet 16 in D.C. He won a Sweet 16 game there over Miami when he was the head coach of Marquette in 2013.
He's a great coach. Yeah. I mean, it is not easy to win at Virginia Tech. He's done a great job. I don't know how long he's going to be there. We'll see. You know, before we lose sight of UCF entirely, one thing that you've tweeted a lot, at least pertaining to them, not just a football school, if I have that right.
More than just a football school.
And they've got the football budget. They've got some football pedigree for sure. Pretty good talent out there in you know, Central Florida, Orlando. Is this, who knows how long Dalkin stays, maybe takes over for Coach K, blah, blah, blah. But are the seeds planted for UCF to become maybe like a Southern Cincinnati? Can they have that kind of an imprint and be good for a long time here, do you think?
You know, I think, you know, when we look at Cincinnati, Cincinnati is one of six programs that's made the NCAA tournament nine straight years. I think if they had a year to break through and have a seminal moment, it was this year.
Yeah.
B.J. Taylor, Taco Fall. Obviously, you could see right now Aubrey Dawkins being a candidate for the next level with the way that he played. So we'll see. I think that there's some seeds in place to be competitive in the top half of the American Conference, but with everything aligned the way it was, this was their year to make the NCAA tournament. This was their year to make a run, which makes yesterday obviously that much more difficult to swallow. You know, I think, too, we get so caught up in one shining moment and obviously all the great moments that there are in March. We saw the other side yesterday.
Those
UCF kids in the locker room and, you know, Your heart feels for that.
Yeah, because they think they were the better team, and they played.
They played like the better team. They outplayed Duke yesterday.
They'll think that the rest of their lives.
Right,
and that's a challenge for a young man or a young woman to compartmentalize that properly, because you don't get any real defined resolution. It's just something you got to carry around, and you're not going to play the game again. They're not going to call the foul that they should have twice. John, what was more surprising to you? I think your answer is going to probably be Murray State because of how good their guard is. But Murray State losing by 28 or Villanova losing by 26?
Villanova losing by 26.
Why is that?
Well, the one thing that Murray State was able to exploit against Marquette was not an overwhelmingly athletic team. So John Morant's ability to penetrate, pitch, find teammates, that was a little bit more magnified because of the team he was going against. We knew that would change against Florida State. For Villanova to be non-competitive in a game, you know, in the NCAA tournament like that, I thought that the St. Mary's game would be a white knuckler. It was. They came out on top. But, you know, to see Villanova dominated like that in a big stage and look up and they're down 30 in the second half, that's something you probably haven't seen in over 5 years.
That's interesting.
Gonzaga, and we knew they weren't vintage, but yeah 30 agreed. Points is right. Not Jay Wright's program.
No, that was ugly. Gonzaga, who we, I don't know, guess maybe started to cut down a little bit because of the fact that they lost to St. Mary's in the conference championship. They're back on track. They feel like they deserve to be number one, just like they have been. No worries, no hangovers, no nothing for Gonzaga, right? This they go through.
Well, T, you know, it's interesting. I talked about this with Jim Boeheim once. He told me that whenever he has made runs in the NCAA tournament, he has always been knocked out, obviously, of the conference tournament early, and his team is a little hungrier, a little fresher. Look at Houston and look at Gonzaga in the first two games. Never really a doubt in any of those two games.
Yeah.
And those were two teams that were surprised in their conference tournament. You know, and I talked to, Mick Cronin, you know, since that, you know, recently as well, that's a situation where, you know, for all intents and purposes, they've won the last 2 years and so on and so forth. But they've also been in a scenario where they, for all intents and purposes, have had to deal with the expectation of playing on Sunday and then turning around and playing Thursday or Friday.
Yeah. Look, who was it? I think it was Rome. I think Rome had few on earlier today. So I heard a little bit of the interview. I didn't realize how consistent they have been, Gonzaga. How do you, with a program that feels small, I mean, they're way up there in Spokane on the far west coast and at the top of the country, how are they sustaining this program? How is he doing this?
Well, how do you think he's doing it? Great players.
I'm asking you.
Great players.
I think
it's great players. It's great players.
Yeah, but how is he getting all of these
players?
Well,
this is the question.
This is the thing. great transfers. And that's one thing that we've seen. Great transfers are in a scenario where they want to go to Gonzaga. Look at their success right now. When they went to a national title game, Nigel Williams-Goss from where? Washington. Jonathan Williams from Missouri. I mean, I don't know if it's, you know, Ron Dane and Tiki Barber, but great players, whether it's football or whatever, you know, it's the same thing. Kyle Wilcher from Kentucky. Yep. Like, I mean, there are great players on this team. Rui Hachimura is going to be a top five pick in the draft. I mean, the personnel, and I talked to Leonard Hamilton about this earlier, Teak. You know, it's interesting. He said, when I watch Gonzaga on film, it's like I'm watching an ACC team.
Yeah.
I mean, Florida State recruited Zach Norvell, who's, you know, was an assassin for them.
But I think the other thing is, like, you know, Mark Few, and you would know this, the temptation to leave, it doesn't seem like it's there now. What was the heaviest flirtation?
There never was one.
Gonzaga never had to fend off any school.
Did he listen to Indiana? Did he listen to Oregon? But, you know, Mark Few isn't concerned with what everybody else thinks he should be doing. Mark Few isn't going to say, you know, because I'm coaching college basketball, my job is so much more important than anybody else's. Yep. If one of his assistants wants to go watch his son's soccer game, he'll change practice.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, you know,
that's tremendous.
He is totally somebody.
Well, this is five straight, right? Five straight Sweet 16s?
Well, let's think about this. Last year they went in 17. Mm-hmm. They went in 16, they lost to Syracuse. And in 15, they lost in a regional final to Duke.
So yeah. Five straight. I mean, it's hard to think about a program that's, I mean, there's 8,000 kids at that school.
It's small.
You know what I mean?
It's a good academic school.
It's a very good academic school to sustain a program that you usually think, because, like, you see these schools, like, they feel smaller, they lose a couple of kids, and
like Wichita State.
Yeah, and
you take a step back.
Yeah,
you can't help it.
And it's not their fault. No. It's just they don't have enough good kids.
No, they don't reload. They've got to rebuild.
He reloads like Duke reloads or Virginia or
whoever.
The
transfer thing, Teak, is a big thing because, like, you know, perfect example is Brandon Clark. Yeah. You know, was that San Jose State 2 years ago? Mm. San Jose State wasn't winning a lot of games.
No.
He goes,
the
he red shirts.
I think, right? San Jose State, are they the Spartans?
Yeah, he red shirts. Now all of a sudden breaks Adam Morrison's record in the NCAA tournament. It's players. Yeah. It's player development. But there's no magic wand, I think, in any of this. I think, you know, you have to have a scenario where you're withstanding the test of time when it comes to being committed to a place. And Mark Few's committed to Gonzaga.
Quick on this, because I want to get a break, come back, and really dive into the games coming up a little bit more specifically. John Rothstein's with us in studio here. I feel like we position certain coaches either as, like, the CEO type that can recruit and bring in, even though I think when we do that, we kind of underrate their actual coaching instincts, which I think is unfair. I think Calipari actually gets adversely knocked in that manner. I think he's a better coach than people think. But somebody like John Beilein is lauded as a brilliant tactician, which I know he is. Is Mark Few a great X's and O's guy, or is he merely really good with really good players?
Probably.
Like, where does he rank on the chalkboard?
I think a combination of both. And the perfect example, and, you know, I was kidding with Tiki about Thunder and Lightning, out the Ron Dane reference, but the team in 2017 that lost to North Carolina was a physically imposing team with Shemek Karnowski and Zach Collins and Jonathan Williams.
Yeah.
And this team has kind of evolved into a hybrid forward look up front with Clark and Hachimura. This is a potent offensive team.
Do they benefit more so when UCLA's really down? It's got to help their profile a little bit, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely helps their profile. It definitely helps the profile, too, that Arizona isn't vintage Arizona,
true,
you know, this year for sure. But, I think that this team is a much more skilled team than the team we saw that won a national championship 2 years ago. Or, excuse me, lost in the title game to North Carolina 2 years ago and, you know, lost one game during the regular season.
All right, get your questions in on Twitter at Teak and Tierney. Rothstein is in for another segment. We'll really dive into some of the matchups coming up. Teak and Tierney as we get ready for the Sweet 16, but still unpacking for what went down over the weekend. So, by the way, third hour, we'll get to the Celtics mess. Kyrie Irving, I mean, not even masking his critique of Brad Stevens.
Somebody
he just leveled him.
He's not there next year. He can't be.
No, there's no way. The question is, do I even want him on the Knicks? I'm not so sure I do anymore. And I want to get to that third hour. I think Kemba Walker could be a better option at this point, something we'll get to. But John is with us. College hoops next as we roll on. What is this guy saying?
That's the NBA you're talking about?
Yeah.
The dark
you know,
side.
The sport where the guys get paid legally instead of like college where they get paid under the table.
Right, the dark side of the force.
Uh-huh. Teak and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
When you're on the field, it's all about the right timing, knowing when to plan the play and knowing when to make the play. It's what all the great coaches who know how to get what they want are doing on the sidelines, making a plan and executing it when the time is right. O'Reilly Auto Parts has a similar philosophy. When you need a part, but you're not in a position to go pick it up, you can just order the parts you need at O'ReillyAuto.com. Then pick them up at any of their 5,000 stores nationwide when you're ready to go. No shipping costs, returns are always easy, and you can pick them up when it's convenient for you. It's that easy, and you know that what you want will be there when you get there, so it saves you time in the store. The shopping game begins when you say it begins and ends when you get what you want at O'Reilly Auto Parts. It's like you've won before you even head out the door. Make the smart play and shop your way for the parts you need at O'ReillyAuto.com. That's O'ReillyAuto.com. Better parts, better prices, every day.
All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by GEICO. Great news, quick way to save money, switch to GEICO. Just go to geico.com and in 15 minutes save 15% or more on car insurance. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM Channel 206 around the country. Our good buddy John Rothstein is in studio, as he has been and will be throughout the entire madness. John, CBS Sports College Hoops Insider, SI as well. And the College Hoops Today podcast, Leonard Hamilton, and he of Rothsteinisms, the national acclaim that my friend is gaining here. Deadspin doing pieces. Everybody wants him on the show. He's becoming a star.
He is a star. Well, you knew he was going to be a star.
I knew from the day I told your mom that 15 years ago. Nice. True story.
All right, so let's move on to the Sweet 16 games here. I'm going to start with my squad.
Yeah.
Thursday games. Late as hell, man. 10 p.m. tip-off.
Oh, quit complaining. At least you have games.
It's over by midnight.
Yeah, over by midnight. I got kids, man.
Oh.
Right, so Virginia, Oregon.
John, we work 3 hours
a
day.
That's a good point. Yeah, I don't have to get up early at all.
Like you sit at the bus stop with everybody else going to a conventional job. Take that back. Just delete what he just said there.
It's just late. I don't want to wait all day for my Cavs to have to play. Virginia played significantly better against Oklahoma. Diakite played significantly better against Oklahoma. And Tony Bennett put him in the starting lineup. Subtle change. I remember we had Tony Bennett on a week or so before the tournament. We asked him about testing different lineups and flipping them around. This one seemed to work. Break this game down. Oregon's a team that most don't know a lot about because they played so poorly for most of the Pac-12 season, but then obviously won the championship in the conference tourney. Tell us Oregon v. Virginia.
February 23rd, Oregon's 15-12 and 6-8 in the Pac-12.
Wow. He's giving you exact dates here, this guy.
10 games later, they're in the Sweet 16. How did it happen? In the last 10 games, Oregon is holding opponents to 54.2 points per game.
Why? What happened?
Did they change something?
Rhythm and chemistry were never things that were associated with Oregon this season. I know this because I was out in Eugene before the start of the season. Start the season, Lewis King doesn't start. He has a knee injury. He's injured. Then Bol Bol goes out of lineup. Mm-hmm. Then Kenny Wooten breaks his jaw. They never had any time to develop rhythm and to develop chemistry. You've got a point guard caliber Final Four caliber point guard, and Peyton Pritchard was the starting point guard for the Final Four team in 2017. You've got a five-star freshman in Lewis King who's flourishing right now as a small ball four in spurts, the same way Dylan Brooks did 2 years ago when they went to a Final Four. And if there's one player that is really kind of the head of the snake of this defense, it's Kenny Wooten. Kenny Wooten, in two NCAA tournament games, has 11 block shots. Jordan Bell, in Oregon's first three NCAA tournament games in 2017, had four combined block shots. That's the level that Kenny Wooten's playing on right now.
I just keep thinking Tito Wooten. I know, buddy Tito. From the Giants, right? Some of the stories you told me.
Oh, Tito. Tito was fun.
Tito. Who's the best player? Maybe just mention him in Wooten that nobody really seems to talk about.
Yeah, I think it's Wooten for sure. I mean, people know about Carson Edwards there in the bottom end of the region of grind. You know, they're going to play Tennessee. But Wooten is a player playing like he's on a trampoline, being able to defend, obviously, at a high level, protecting the front of the rim, but also catch alley-oops like he's a volleyball player. Yeah. There's a lot of Jordan Bell in Kenny Wooten. It's one of the reasons why, if you're Virginia right now, you have the most to lose because of what happened last year. You're the one team that I think really needs to exercise the demon.
Aren't they past it, though?
I don't think so. I think to really exercise the demon, you have to at least get to the Final Four. And you look at elsewhere around the bracket, Duke's Duke. Whether they lose on Friday or not, it's still going to be Duke.
Mm-hmm.
Gonzaga got over the hump 2 years ago. They got to a Final Four. They lost in the national title game. North Carolina's North Carolina. Kentucky's still going to be Kentucky. In this NCAA tournament, Virginia is the team that has the most to lose, and I think Virginia is the team that has the most dangerous game of the one seeds. I think Gonzaga has the toughest matchup, but Virginia has been the most vulnerable of the one seeds that we've seen so far, except for Duke. And I think one of the big reasons why is Oregon's playing with house money. Oregon wasn't going to get into the NCAA tournament as an at-large team. They're not supposed to be here, and they're playing great basketball, and they're playing great defensive basketball. So Virginia has been offensively, pound for pound, inch for inch, the best it's been under Tony Bennett. They are going to need to score to win this week.
Yeah, Kyle Guy's got to start making some shots.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. The situation at LSU, they seem to have done a really good job of pushing the distractions.
Amazing.
With Will Wade to the side, it hasn't impacted their play. Going up against Izzo here Friday night, for those who care, and that's most of us, except I know you don't care, but we don't care that you don't care about point spreads. We do. Michigan State -6, in case you were curious, over LSU. Are you surprised LSU's been so
shocked?
Yeah,
shocked. And the full credit goes to the kids in that program for their resiliency and their strength, but this is how close LSU has been to getting knocked out twice. They played Yale and won by 5. Yale goes 8 of 37 from 3, and Mie Ioane, their NBA prospect, is 2 of 16 from the field. And then you obviously saw what happened against Maryland. It's the resolve of these kids, and Nats who should be getting credit for enduring everything that they went through the season. Remember, their teammate Wade Sims was shot and killed before the season. Then their head coach, Will Wade, isn't allowed to coach in the NCAA tournament and the SEC tournament because he's suspended indefinitely. And this group of men, young men, have found a way to win 2 games in the NCAA tournament. You need to talk about the resiliency of those kids.
Yeah, and that's why I brought it up. Is there a chance that Will Wade is back next year?
I don't have any information on that right now.
No, not information, like an opinion. Do you think that there's...
There's always... I'm not going to speculate on speculation. I mean, the optics don't look good right now, but... You know, I think we've learned a lot in college basketball since the FBI scandal came out, you know, probably about a year and a half ago, that jumping to conclusions is not a wise thing to do.
Mm-hmm. They're going to be an all formal. Well, I mean, come on, dude. I mean, what do you mean? What does that mean?
I think people, you know, because they see something on a report saying, well, this job's going to open, that job's going to open, and, you know, a lot of stuff hasn't come to fruition.
I have no idea what LSU's administration's thinking, but it's the fact that he was suspended. You and I talked about this.
Of course,
that
he's suspended. He's not coaching an NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I
think the issue is he's refusing to...
Well, he's refusing to talk because he's under federal subpoena. That's where this is tricky, because if you're under federal subpoena... At the advice of his legal counsel, he's being told not to talk.
Yeah. Okay. All right. College Hoops Today, episode 177 with Leonard Hamilton.
177.
That's awesome, dude.
Who's number one, by the way? Cal? Who'd you
have? Bo Ryan.
Oh, cool.
Bo Ryan.
That's a good one. Right? We've had him on. He's awesome.
It's a great one.
Oh, man.
Anyways, Leonard Hamilton.
Miss Bo Ryan coaching in Wisconsin.
How does Florida State, with their length, beat Gonzaga, playing as well as they are? As we talked about it last segment. How does Florida State, because they're disruptive, and they've been playing great as of late. Obviously, they beat Virginia in the ACC semifinals in the conference tourney. They had a game for at least a half with Duke in the ACC final. How do they beat Gonzaga?
Well, Teague, you know, it's interesting you said that. It's a great point on your part, because I was talking about this with the Gonzaga staff, you know, in the preseason, because they played Florida State in the Sweet 16 last year. And you got to remember, who didn't play in the Sweet 16 last year? Killian Tilly, who's right now, knock on wood for Gonzaga's sake, should be healthy. Killian Tilly. Anytime you've got a front line like Florida State's that's going to be really tough defensively and getting to the front of the rim, what do you have to do? Go over the top of the defense.
Yeah.
If Tilly now can become a guy that can pop out and go over the top of Cabangeli and Kumaji, you have a different wrinkle than you had last year when you played Florida State and lost in Anaheim and lost in Southern California.
Florida State's not a historically, or this season, good three-point shooting team, but they've been banging them in as of late.
Yeah.
They missed Bobby Soar.
Yeah, it's Bobby Soar. No, I mean, we knew that Florida State was going to be really good defensively. I think they've been better offensively than we thought in this NCAA tournament, but I talked about this earlier today with Leonard Hamilton. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be like Duke, even Virginia and Carolina, and being able to have a 1-2-3 punch like you. He's got to beat you 1-10. Yeah. And that's this
but
Florida
he's got
State
the,
team.
He's got the bench to do it, though. I mean, you
start, got, no, that, that's it.
He's like, and, you look at some of these other teams.
And
like, you look
thing.
At some of these other teams. Like, Duke went 2-7 deep. They played 7, right?
I don't know.
Florida State can play 10 and be comfortable doing it.
College teams play 8 guys.
Yeah.
I mean, the outlier, maybe 8.5 if there's a foul issue. to play 10 and to do it as well as he does is brilliant.
I agree.
That's hard.
It's very hard.
I mean, you can't lose track of anything. I mean, that's a lot of, you know, mental manipulation, mm-hmm. and that's a lot not to do. All right, John, I know Texas Tech doesn't get the national pub. They don't have the pedigree of a lot of these teams mm-hmm. here. But I think the Texas Tech-Michigan game has a chance to be, you know.
First of 40 wins?
Yeah. Oh, boy, I was hoping it's a little more like 50, but, you know, I'm not saying you're wrong. This could be great, though.
What's the over-under?
I think that this could be the best game of the weekend.
126. Really 126 and a half.
Look at you. That's low. I mean, that's 63.
I know,
that's
but you're saying, it's going to be like 80. I'm thinking like over-under is going to be like 90.
Obviously, he's saying first of 40. I'm saying, yeah, but I mean, 126, I guarantee that's the lowest over-under of the entire of all the
Virginia,
games coming up.
Virginia, Oregon, well, 119.
I didn't see Virginia's.
Yeah.
126 is low. You're in the 60s in college basketball. That's low. Do you think that, would it be, I know it's only a 2-point spread, so I guess it wouldn't be, but would you be really surprised if Michigan does not advance?
Yes.
You would be.
Yes, because for all intents and purposes, this Michigan team is ahead offensively of this Texas Tech team. And this is what I'm going to tell you. Texas Tech has been a team of role players all year long, playing an elite level defensively. I look at Michigan. I see Iggy Brazdeikis. I see Charles Matthews. I see guys who can make shots with regularity. And I see a situation where you have a scenario where Michigan, I think, has more answers offensively. You have to have answers offensively. But I think the great thing, Brandon, about this Sweet 16 is this. All 16 teams can get to the Final Four.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Teague and I were saying to start the show, this is sometimes, you know, the reward you get for the early price that you pay. When you get a lot of chalk early, you got to sit through some duds, as we all did Friday night, Saturday night, Thursday night. I mean, you got some bad games, but now you have 16 teams legitimately that are good, that are really talented.
Well, before we let you go here, John, Cal and Jason Kidd, we talked about it briefly, in inbounds and out of bounds. Mm-hmm. Is that going to happen?
I've been told that, you know, that's not on the top of Cal's list. So that report, I don't think, is at least right now going to, you know, be coinciding with Cal's search as of now.
What'd you do? You broke two things over the Siena. You broke in Tulane.
And we just have, I was just tweeting, is Stony Brook is expected to promote assistant Geno Ford to head coach.
That's tweet while we're on the show.
Yeah. So I'm glad
that we're not boring you to tears
and
here.
You're not boring me. I'm trying to do both jobs.
And talking at the same time, by the way.
Yeah. So Stony Brook's going to promote from within. That's good. That's not a domino. Yeah. And I had Siena promoting also within, the assistant Carmen Masciarello and Ron Hunter going from Georgia State to Tulane.
So
the carousel is starting to spin. And guys, I expect by the next time we talk Thursday, there will be plenty more to dive into.
Maybe a little A&M, maybe a little Vatek news.
We've got to tune in. 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock.
A little palpable buzz. We'll see. John, great work, buddy. Appreciate it, man.
All right. Thanks, guys. See you Thursday.
You got it. Awesome. He's on top of it. He's hustling. John Rothstein, CBS Sports College Hoops Insider. Does the same for SI College Hoops Podcast. It's a good one this week. Leonard Hamilton, as John said a few times, this very well might be Leonard's last chance to get to a Final Four, maybe beyond. So, this is a big spot for him. Yeah. And, you know, that's a pretty good hire for Tulane, by the way. Hunter. Remember when Hunter ruptures Achilles
right.
he was coaching from the
that's
chair?
Right. That's
when,
right.
I think it was when his son banged in that shot.
That's right.
John, was that what his son hit the
three? R.J. Hunter.
Yeah.
R.J. Hunter.
And he ruptured his Achilles celebrating. He's coaching from a chair. That's a good hire for Tulane. We'll see. They didn't win a conference game all year.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a rough spot, but we'll see. All right, so let's get the update from ACK. Coming up, the Gronk man retires.
Gronk.
Could he possibly come back? And
no.
Assuming for a moment that he doesn't, where does this lead the Pats moving forward? As vulnerable as they've ever been, or just a little reset, a little tweak? We'll hit it after ACK, who comes at you right now. Here's Rich. Okay, we're going to put the college hoops aside, get into Gronk here. First up, though, time now for Doing More, brought to you by the Home Depot. The next generation of home improvement, everything you need to do Project Smarter. It's the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. We take a look at somebody who's doing a whole lot for his team at the Bucks. Padding their lead over the Raptors in the East this past week to 4. And Giannis Antetokounmpo, a big reason why. The Greek Freak going nuts. 35 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists over 3. And he finds himself in a two-man race for league MVP with James Harden. 8 games to go. We'll do some NBA top of the hour with Kyrie Irving, a lot of shade at Brad Stevens, not even like thinly veiled shade, just overtly basically saying he doesn't make adjustments and we'll get destroyed on the pick and roll. But, you know, we'll get to Gronk here. But there was a big game Friday. Oklahoma City won at Toronto. This was we were so wrapped up and immersed in the college hoops, understandably. But then Saturday, obviously the Hornets beat the Celtics. Mm-hmm. That's when Kyrie popped off a little bit. The Hawks beat Philly, which was weird. Dallas destroyed the Warriors at Oracle. It was 126-91.
I was down first in Atlanta on Saturday, and I was supposed to stay for the game, but we didn't because we had a board meeting for Culture City.
Gotcha.
Their arena is century inclusive, so it's easy flight for everybody.
Yeah.
So they invited us to stay for the game.
But you've already been to that a couple times before.
We launched it a year ago.
Yeah, I remember when you went down there.
But we just do our board meetings down there because they're great to us. The Hawks are, and Dominique Wilkins is involved. He came in and said, "Hey, from." Minute, but getting ready for the game. But I was asking him about Trae Young. Uh-huh. I was like, "You guys surprised by this kid?" And he said,
"What was his honest answer?"
He said, "You know what? We're surprised how much better he's getting. Like he's just getting better.
He's not hitting the rookie wall.
None, no. Exactly. Usually, especially with the volume, like the usage rate of that kid.
Yep.
You would think that at some point he's just gonna like, I'm done." He just keeps getting better.
He's 153 pounds.
I know.
I thought he'd be shot by now.
Vince Carter, as we were leaving, because they were getting ready to start shoot around, as we were leaving, head back to the airport to come home, Vince Carter was out there. I'm like,
just at him?
He was on the court. We were in the concourse.
Gotcha.
But I'm like, look at that old man.
Still making a few mil, still chilling.
I was like, he was playing at UNC when I was at Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Right? How in the heck is he still out there playing? He still had some bounce in him.
Yeah. He's just dunked this year.
He was knocking down three after three. I'm like, he is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And he still looks as young as, it is what it is. Yeah, black don't crack. It is what it is.
There you go.
He looks like
see, the white guy hanging out 30. At that age, he looked like he's 70.
Exactly. Like white hair.
Oh, my God. Got the comb over. So we'll do a lot of hoops coming up top of the hour. Also, the Pacers beat Denver. They killed him yesterday. The Spurs wanted Boston, so the Celtics going the wrong way. The Kyrie stuff, which we'll hit. Okay. I mean, listen, Gronk, first of all, if this is it, tremendous career, tremendous impact on the league, tremendous character for the NFL.
No doubt.
I believe the Pats, if he is indeed done for good, I know his agent said, well, things might change if Brady gets a little desperate, picks up the phone midseason, come back, we need you, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if I'm so quick to embrace the notion, as most people have today, that Gronk is undeniably the greatest tight end of all time. I don't know if I could co-sign that without having a little debate here.
Yeah,
I mean, everybody's pretty much saying this like it's fact.
Well, yeah. I think they put him in that title on him because he's so indefensible, right? There's been some greats, Ozzie Newsome, but that was a different generation. The game was like significantly different.
Winslow
was fantastic as well. Shannon Sharp was amazing.
Tony Gonzalez,
who has the most touchdowns, and those guys have, I think, like 30 more touchdowns than Gronk does. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's because they played for 14 or 15 years, whereas Gronk is only playing 9 seasons with 79 touchdowns. It's unreal. Not Shannon Sharp, but Tony Gonzalez and those guys have like 117. Plus touchdowns. And so if you want to say that Gronk is the greatest ever, it's not because of stats. Like people will look at stats and say, oh, Tony Gonzalez did this and, you know, all these other guys did whatnot. But Gronk, because he was selfless and he would block his ass off like he was a tackle.
The first couple years, though.
I don't know if he was asked to. Now, let's not forget, the first couple of years, Aaron Hernandez was there, and he was the blocking tight end. The Pats are one of the few teams, you know, holding on to the two tight end set.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, religiously. Not like a couple plays a game. They run it like 40, 50% of the game. They're in two tight end sets. But because Gronk was – he was indefensible. 6'7", you know, 280 pounds. The thing that would preclude me from saying he's the greatest ever – is the fact that he was not always available.
Yeah, which is really a lot of the reason I say what I say.
So 9 seasons. One, he missed completely, I believe, at least a significant portion of it. There's parts of other ones with his knee injuries. He's out there like a robot. And even last year, even though he was critical in the playoff run and in the Super Bowl, obviously that big 3rd-and-10 conversion that he had was amazing. But like the season wasn't epic. You know?
No.
It wasn't like, wow, look at his, he did this and that.
He had less than 50 catches this past year.
It was just kind of like, okay, you get in the situation in the postseason, now we're going to use you. And so I have a problem saying a guy who's not available for 16 and then 3 more, which obviously with the bye week, because the Pats always got the bye week, 3 more and you win a Super Bowl. It's hard to say that guy is the best ever.
Well, that's why I say what I say. I mean, he's only started 100 out of a possible 144 games.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you look at this year by year. First year started 11. Second year was fully healthy, played all 16. Then he just played 11. Then he played 6. Then he went 10 for 15, 15 for 15, 6 of 8,
mm-hmm.
14 of 14, and then 11 of 13. So every year, really, with the exception of his second year and his age 26 season, which was 2015,
yeah.
Every other year it was kind of, you know, right. Battling, nagging, or debilitating injury.
This is why it's so hard to evaluate Patriots, other than Tom Brady. But it's hard to evaluate these guys because part of the philosophy and part of the plan mm-hmm. is to not use players at certain spots. And with Gronk, it was serious injuries. But otherwise, like the Julian Edelman conversation that we always have and the debate whether or not he's a Hall of Famer, right? Can you fault him for not being a part of a game plan? And I believe this. There's probably a lot of games where he's just not part of the game plan. You know what I mean? And so in the regular season, he's not going to make Pro Bowls. He's not going to make All Pros because he's expendable for them to win, right? He's not an integral part of them winning every single game. Yet when you get into the postseason, he becomes that. Gronk is the same way,
mm-hmm.
right? When he's healthy in the postseason, it's really hard to beat them. I think that's why people look at him as a first ballot Hall of Famer and one of the greatest ever because of what he did in the postseason. Even the one he wasn't available in, they still won.
And the other thing about Gronk, too, is that he kept it just a little unpredictable mm-hmm. in the most predictable universe in all the sport. You just, not that he was dangerously unpredictable, although if there was a minute maybe mm-hmm. 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 6, we're like, wow, this guy, is he going to drink himself? I don't even know if he drinks a lot, but the perception is that he partied his behind off.
I think that was a brand thing.
It may have been. Yeah. And I know he doesn't, you know, the only thing that, what is it? He only spends endorsement money. He banks and invests everything else in terms of his salary. But he kept, and I can't believe I'm saying this because he, the Pats have made my life a living hell as a football fan. I mean, every year they're in my way and every year they obliterate my team and it's getting old here. But you got to respect the guys. He's a guy's guy.
Yeah.
You'd want to hang out with Gronk. We'd love to be Gronk.
And he's a great teammate.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
So if you had a choice between Gronk, healthy Gronk,
yep.
Antonio Gates, or Tony Gonzalez, who you take it? I think the answer is easy. I think it's Gronk. You're always going to take Gronk. If he's healthy, you're taking him. Because he's fast. He could run away from guys.
Tony Gonzalez was fast, too.
Tony Gonzalez
was an athlete.
But he wasn't a blocker.
Yeah, but, I mean, do you have to be a blocker today? You don't really have to be.
In the Pats offense, you better be.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you lay it out like that, sure. But, yeah, I mean, the thing about Gronk is that you can never, ever single cover him.
No.
Or you're going to get destroyed.
You can, but you're losing that battle.
Yeah. Right? And I'm not saying Tony G's not going to win those battles most times, or Gates or the other guys, Shannon Sharp, of course, too. But there's just, he was so big and so burly and still so fast, even though it looked like he was lumbering, mm-hmm. he was still fast. 6'7". He was an athlete.
And you're 6'7". Your stride is twice most people are covering you.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. I know. You know which play, and I'm happy he's going to retire because he's starting to get beat up, and you don't want to see him limp away from the game. The end of the Dolphins game. Not that he should have been in that position to have to defend that ridiculous lateral, the Miami Miracle.
I agree.
But he looked so mechanical
mm-hmm.
and so without oil in his joints.
Well, I think that's
so unathletic.
That's ultimately why this decision, I don't think this was a hard decision for him. I really don't. Whether or not he was going to retire after this season, I think it was an easy decision. He was a shell of himself physically. Like, he was still great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when he needed to make plays, he made the plays.
Oh, yeah.
But the athlete that he was, you just didn't see it anymore.
Got stripped away.
So it was easy. I think it was an easy decision for him to walk away. Now, some people are speculating that he could come back. I know Drew Rosenhaus said that as well. I mean, why?
Well, this is what I want to ask you. Let me put you in the position of answering this because you played. If he lifts once or twice a week and mm-hmm. he doesn't put on 30 pounds of sloppiness, which we doubt he will.
Yeah, I think
he'll probably get ready for movies or wrestling, whatever. But if he just stays in, a modicum of shape here, and Brady does call him midseason, can he get off the couch and play football tight end? Can he jump in the middle of a season and play?
For what they ask him to do, probably not.
Really?
Because it's so much of a win thing, like being in shape, like football shape, because they don't ask him to just stand at the line of scrimmage. You know, their tight ends move around a lot. There's a lot of motion pre-snap, you know, flipping sides, a lot of, you know, cutting the seam down the middle of the field. There's a lot of things that he would be vulnerable to. And I just don't see it happening. I think he's done. I think I think physically his body is taking a pounding. Now, people are saying he's going to go into wrestling. It's also a pounding.
Does he make an appearance at WrestleMania 35?
Definitely does.
He's got to, right?
Definitely.
He's got to.
There's no doubt about it.
He should walk Rousey to the ring.
Or he could go to the new wrestling. The new wrestling outfit. There's a new one, AEW.
What?
Yeah, it's a new one.
What is it?
It's brand new.
Yesterday? I don't know anything about it.
The first one is in, the first event is in Vegas in June.
Really? Yeah. Like fake wrestling, but.
No, it's yeah, it's like, it's a competitor. It's the first competitor in 20-something years.
So if we're going back, it's like the NWA or the AWA. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. AEW.
I got to look into this. AEW.
All Elite Wrestling. It's Brandy, and I forget Brandy's husband's
name. I don't
know
if I like the acronym. I don't know if I like the name. The All Elite Wrestling?
Shad Khan is one of the owners.
From the Jags. Okay.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.